Why am I looking at that? I'm a farmer's daughter. I'm hugely passionate about food production, and I really believe that farming deserves a higher profile in the minds of the general public than it currently has. And as a journalist, I was looking for a way to bridge my media career and my farming roots.
What are you seeing in the US compared to the UK?
I'm on day two, and so far, in terms of farming, it's very different. Well, we're in Illinois here, dominated by grain production, and the nearest thing that we have in the UK to anything similar is in the east of England, which is our grain area. So it's very flat, but our fields look pokey compared to the fields that I see here in Illinois. So American agriculture, everything is on a much bigger scale. If we go into sort of talking about policy and legislation, Europe, you know, we don't have GMOs. Sow stalls, for instance, are still legal here. So there's a lot of legislation that is completely different. So the way that you can farm here, we can't do in Europe. I'm not commenting on whether that's good or bad.
What are the biggest disconnects that you see in how the general public views agriculture between the UK and here?
I was surprised to find that there are a lot of similar issues. The UK is an incredibly urban country. More than 80% of British people live in urban areas, and we're a very heavily populated country on a very small area. That means that there is quite a large disconnect in the general population not knowing where their food comes from. We have children growing up in the middle of London that do not know that milk comes from a cow, and I'm absolutely serious about that. And that's more widespread than you would think, which is quite terrifying. I was expecting to come to the US to find that people are much more knowledgeable about farming simply because your agricultural industry is huge compared to ours. You're the biggest exporter of agricultural products in the world, and the area, I think it's something like 70% of your landmass is farmed, or certainly more than half.
And you're finding it depends.
I'm finding that actually there's quite a lot of similarities. There is still that disconnect in urban areas. Even in states like Illinois, which are very rural, there is still a complaint among the farming industry that a lot of people aren't interested or don't know about where their food comes from and have certain preconceptions about how their food is produced that isn't necessarily based in the facts. I was really surprised by that. But equally, having talked to you, Charlie, I have picked up on in Illinois, this is not representative of all of the US, that this is still a state, or certainly the county that I'm in Bloomington and Normal, this is an area where people still have either a family connection to farming or some kind of spiritual link to the land, because farming is a big employer here, a big part of the economy. So on day two of my trip, I'm finding similarities and differences. We'll see.
Where are you going?
From here, I'm getting in my hire car and I'm driving into Iowa, and I'm meeting the State Secretary of Ag, Bill Northey, there. So I'll be looking more at policy side of things, and some more journalists, more in the print realm. So I've done my radio bit here in Illinois, I'll be talking to the print journos in Iowa, then on into South Dakota, meeting the beef ranchers, because I haven't seen a great deal of livestock farming here, so it'll be a good place to have a look at livestock. And my dad, who is a beef and sheep farmer, is flying into Sioux Falls, and he has always wanted to see the Wild West. Literally, he is a child of the 1950s who was born and raised on the Western. And it's just
so
a
you're going hungry. To Deadwood, South Dakota, are you?
We absolutely are. Okay. And Badlands and the Black mm-hmm. Hills. And yeah, I'm going to show him the real Wild West. Okay. So it's quite a trip.
In the U.S., we're running into a contracting journalism industry. Advertising revenue, which supports it, is falling, and many newspapers and broadcast media outlets are reducing staff. The listenership and readership are changing their habits and their ways of accessing. How is this process moving in the UK? What do you see?
Oh, it's very similar, Charlie. Like, especially in our print world, you know, our newspapers are having a very difficult time to remain competitive against the internet and online journalism and social media. Increasingly, people are getting their news and information from Facebook and Twitter. So it's a very similar story. How are they weathering that? One thing that's interesting, we have found that the super local newspapers are actually doing quite well. Regional newspapers are taking the hardest hit, but at a super local level, they seem to be bearing up against the pressure. Our national newspapers, I think, are a downward trend, but still holding on because they're institutions. They really are. And their online presence is getting strong enough to help them withstand the falling paper sales. TV and radio, I work for the BBC, and the programme that I work for, it's called Countryfile, is doing phenomenally well. And we're expanding it, really. I mean, I started working on the programme as a researcher 10 years ago, which makes me feel old. And we were tiny, really. And now we have, you know, a team of 11 directors, 6 researchers, and, you know, viewers of up to 9 million people, which is more than the X Factor. So for a rural programme to be pulling that kind of viewership is quite something.
Why do you think that is?
I think people have overlooked rural affairs as an area that people aren't particularly interested in. Our programme used to go out in a bit of a graveyard slot on a Sunday morning on BBC One. It's a national programme. We used to get about 2 million, up to 2.6 million viewers then. And then someone took a punt on Countryfile and they thought, pretty pictures, nice rural setting, that might work in a primetime slot on a Sunday evening. So we were moved to the sort of 6, 7pm slot. It moves around a bit.
Boom.
Boom. It was overnight success. And we're building on it. And we went prime time in 2009, and we're now getting great ratings. And I think it's because people, without realising it, they are interested. They are interested in our countryside and how it works, how our farming industry works. And they're surprised by it. You know, when you sort of show, we have a segment called Adam's Farm, which is a great presenter called Adam Henson. Just an ordinary farmer with a mixed farming operation in the Cotswolds in a beautiful area. And that section is just about him doing normal farming things. Nothing special, nothing razzmatazz, just testing his cattle for bovine TB, which is a disease that we have a real problem with. And when he found out that some of his prize animals had this disease, you know, he cried. And to see that kind of raw emotion coming from a farmer connected people in the middle of London with the plight of these people that work on the land. And it's just struck a chord. It really has.
How do you translate the human experience that you're trying to show with that kind of example to the complexity of food webs that are important to understand how modern society works globally?
Well, it's a huge issue, Charlie. I mean, just to sort of touch on a couple of issues surrounding that, putting sort of global commodity trades aside for a second and looking at the supply chains in the UK, for instance, shortening supply chains and simplifying them is something people are calling for very loudly, especially since we had a scandal a few years ago with horse meat. I don't know if you heard about that in the UK, but there were some burgers that were found to have horse meat in them. It was picked up in Ireland by the Food Standards Agency, first of all, and then just spread all through the UK. And it raised serious questions about our supply chains and how transparent they are and how the food, particularly cheaper food that we're finding in the frozen aisle in our grocery stores, how we can be absolutely sure that it is what it says it is. So I think there is a real case for simplifying food supply chains. And also, as the consumer demanding to know, I think, is the real thing. So I think that's where the power is to influence change here. And, you know, if you can afford it, you can go out and you can buy food from your farmer's market and you know exactly where it comes from. Unfortunately, most consumers can't afford food like that. So the onus is on the industry and government to make sure that they are fighting for the consumers who really have to count every penny. And that takes us on to look at sort of global commodities, you know, dairy and grain and so on.
And how do you tell that story while keeping the human element?
Right. Because we're all people. It doesn't, you know, the whole planet is, you know, what everything that we do, there is a person behind it. So it doesn't matter whether you are looking at farming, you know, you're looking at grain exports as they move around the world. That grain started somewhere and was harvested by a person, is picked up by a person. Take, you know, there are people through the entire chain, and it's getting to those people that is the challenge, and making the industry realise that there are people stories and there is a human story behind everything that we do. no matter whether it is on a small scale where you have a little farmer who's marketing his produce on a fancy website and telling you his story, he's not the only one with a story. Just because he's small and organic and producing food in a fantastic way, that doesn't mean that the guy that is farming 3,000 hectares with the big machinery and planting 80 hectare fields with grain, that doesn't mean that he doesn't have a story, that he doesn't have a family, that he isn't passionate about the food that he produces. So it's about understanding that, I think.
Anna Jones works for Countryfile on BBC One. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie, for having me.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.